finally, Ringside Rewind has come back to your podcast feed. That is right, ladies and gentlemen. I am one half of the podcast tag team champions of the world, Chris Jardine, a.k.a. Snaggle J, and I am over the moon excited to be back on the mic with my main man with the hot tag, Mr. Chris Doyle. What's going on, buddy?
Oh, you know, so have I missed some things or
just absolutely nothing. There's been wrestling has taken a multi-month hiatus to match up with your hiatus.
Yes,
nothing has happened.
Oh, that's good to know. Then nobody's done any debuts. And because the last thing I think the last thing on our last show we did together was, weren't we teasing like Bray Wyatt showing up on like All Out or something like that? I think that was our last gimmick.
We were rumming about their Danielson as well. And
yeah,
there was a lot of things happening around that time. And, you know, I thought maybe you had spilled some beans somewhere and someone took out a hit on you. And
Tony Khan decided, you know.
Old TK called in the heavies.
Listen, he could have put me in there in the Jacksonville Jaguars defensive line and nobody would have found me.
I mean, listen, I am glad you're back into relatively good health, at least very, very at the bare minimum, healthy enough to sit at a computer in front of a microphone so that we can talk about wrestling, because
that's about the bare minimum these days.
Well, listen, I've missed it. I know our listeners have missed it. I'm glad you're back. And we've got a doozy lined up today. What better way than to kick down the door and make a big pop return to the wrestling podcast scene than with our 2021 Ringside Rewind annual award show. And I say annual, even though it's the first one, but you know what? I mean, we could do it in December every year. It's like,
well, you gotta have a first one in order to be annual.
That's right. I mean, you know what? We're going to get into it. Like, you know, it's been an interesting year. It's, you know, there's a lot. We got a lot of great awards. I'm sure we're going to have some heated debate as we get into it. But we got to start off. Listen, we got a lot to catch up on. And I'm going to defer this one to you a little bit. During your hiatus period, was there anything wrestling-wise that piqued your interest? Anything that stuck in your craw or something good that you've been just itching to talk about?
I'm going to be honest, during my, and you know, we've kind of been bouncing around it, where what happened was I had a health issue that pretty much put me pilled up in just like any 90s wrestler, I was pilled up and in the hospital for about 7 weeks. So for most of that time, I really wasn't paying much attention to what was going on. You know, I was getting the high level stuff, you know, what happened in the, yeah, you know, the main event on AEW and things like that. And going into the Full Gear pay-per-view. And, you know, I was a couple of weeks away from watching that. I didn't watch that till I got home. But I am very happy with what AEW is doing. They are a can't miss show. And even Rampage is can't miss. Dark. Now that they're taping at the old Universal Studios in Orlando, Florida, doing, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of tapings there once a month. Those are fun shows. You get to see some of the guys work their, what I like to call 90s Memphis muscles, where they're not quite as serious. They can take, you know, do a little comedy, you know, use the surroundings of the studio, and I'm a sucker for studio wrestling, so I think AEW is doing everything right, while WWE is doing just about everything wrong.
Well, listen, I think here's the thing: not that there's a good time to have a health issue to put you into a wrestling hiatus, but Survivor Series season, absolutely the best time to have that happen, because you have an entire 6 week period of WWE programming where literally nothing matters. And you know, like they're like I've come to despise Survivor Series, because it went from being a big four event that I looked forward to every year to just can't wait for this to be over so that we can get back to at least the low level storytelling that WWE has.
Well, the problem is that they do the draft right around that time.
Yeah.
So they do that. And then 2 weeks later, we're supposed to believe that all of the guys and girls are worried about, you know, brand supremacy when 2 weeks ago they were on the other show.
Yeah.
Like, it's just bad.
I think for me, like, you know, I tend to agree with your sentiment that AEW at this point is appointment viewing for me. I don't really watch Dark or Dark Elevation. Like, if I happen to catch them, you know, with some time on my hands and YouTube around, you know, I will watch it. But I don't miss a Dynamite. I don't miss a Rampage. I think they're both great programming. I do have some additional thoughts that I may elaborate on when we do our predictions for next year segment. But I think I've really been, I'm trying not to be part of the herd of marks who just take to Twitter all day and crap on the other brand that they don't like. It's easy to jump on WWE and crap all over everything they're doing right now, but I feel like I'm giving them a fair shot. You know, I am glad that Brock is back. I think that at least gives, like, you know, something for Roman to do, because they've literally built all of SmackDown around Roman Reigns. I've completely lost all interest in the WWE women's division, both of them. I think at this point, I don't care anymore. They've made me not care with the way they've handled Becky Lynch's return, with the way they've handled her character, with the whole Charlotte Flair drama crap. You know, they've made me stop caring about the women's division, which I think is not great. But I mean, I think still, I do think one thing that's good is, you know, with AEW being as successful as they have been in their first 2+ years of operation, there's always wrestling to watch. Like, that's the thing. Every night of the week, there is some sort of wrestling that you can pick up and watch, or watch on YouTube or whatever, and just enjoy it. Like, yeah, you can sit and crap on WWE for their lack of storytelling, or their really shallow storytelling, or the fact that they're misbooking people or whatever. But I mean, at least it's still wrestling you can watch. There's still a very large percentage of people who love WWE and who watch their programming religiously. You know, I think, again, NXT is still trying to find its footing in the whole 2.0 genre. But I love Bron Breakker. I think he's great. I love that they're sort of marketing him as Scott Steiner 2.0, which is awesome. I love to see it, right? Like, I just think it's a great time to be a wrestling fan, whether you only watch one promotion or whether you try to dabble in multiple, you know, whether you're watching stuff from Mexico or stuff from overseas, there's just so much good wrestling. Some is better than others, but yeah, I mean, and we're going to highlight a lot of that in this episode, right? When we talk about some of our awards, just to say, like, man, it's been a really, really good year for wrestling.
I saw somebody online mention Bron Breakker and calling him the big bad booty nephew.
God, yeah, I hope they call him that on TV.
That I thought that was pretty good. And I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about NXT as we get through our awards here. What do you say we start off? And let's start off with the moment of the year. Snaggler, I'm going to start calling you Coach. Coach, what's up for your moment of the year?
Well, funny that you would call me Coach. Because my moment of the year is the return of Cornelius Matthew Punk, better known as CM Punk, on the episode of AEW Rampage. Listen, for me, this was probably one of the easier ones for me to fill in. The hype that went into it, the anticipation after 7 years, the way AEW played it out, with all but saying out loud that CM Punk was going to come back at this episode of Dynamite, calling it the first dance, all the, you know, in Chicago, like literally the only thing they didn't do ahead of this episode was say, hey, CM Punk's going to kick off the show. And the reaction of the crowd, I mean, that's a moment that you will see in YouTube clip compilations until the day we die, for the reaction and just the honesty of that moment. And you can say whatever you want to say about what they've done with Punk since that moment, but for me, the return of CM Punk is head and shoulders the moment of the year.
Is there now, any other one that could be picked? Because that's mine too. Like, yeah. And we both like it. CM Punk debuting on Rampage at the first dance in Chicago. And both of us are marks for CM Punk.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt about it. Charles Montgomery Punk made his return. And we both said, shut up and take our money. Like, both of us ordered shirts as quickly as we could.
Yep.
Like, just the sound of that song hitting and the roof coming off and the announcers staying out and JR letting Excalibur have that moment, which is a big thing, because you gotta think that the first thought was, the first words on JR's, but JR is kind of the past, where Excalibur is going to be the future, yeah, of AEW in the broadcasting booth. So him getting the first words when Punk comes out and holding out as long as they did, it was perfect. You couldn't have done it any better. I can't think of anything that would have made that entire first half an hour of that, yeah, Rampage show any better. The only thing it could have been is if they had held off on debuting Rampage until that week.
Yeah, I think, and again, you know, the great thing about the internet wrestling community is everybody tries to backseat literally everything, and everybody thinks that they are God's gift to booking. Again, you could say ifs, ands, or buts, or rebook that segment as many times as you want. I don't think you could have done it better than it was done. You know, for that, like you said, the music to hit, the reaction for him to come out on his knees at the top of the ramp, soaking it all in. I mean, that was a real moment. And I think, again, there is maybe 10 people in wrestling who are still alive who would generate that kind of reaction if they returned. And 10,
I think you're about double.
10's
what it
being,
would...
Yeah, 10's being generous. But like, it's a limited number of people that could do that and generate that kind of reaction. And again, you could look at anything else that happened in the past year and look at the booking, the reaction, the planning, the impact of it all. And the CM Punk return moment will exceed every other moment of the year in all of those metrics.
I think if AEW had done nothing this year but bring back CM Punk in that way, we would be sitting here and saying it was a successful year for AEW.
Yep. Agreed.
And I don't want to misunderstand you, but do you have an issue with how they've been booking him since he come back?
I mean, it's a contentious issue. I think that what is obvious is that they had a plan on how they wanted to book him upon his return. I think I'm starting to change my tune a little bit now that he's moved on to what appears to be a feud with MJF. I just think in the initial part of it, he was booked kind of weakly. Like, you know, he get in there, he wrestled Darby, then nothing ever came out of it after, right? You know, he's been, you know, picking up a few lower tier feuds here and there. He feuded a little bit with, you know, with Taz's group, and then that kind of died off. Like, I just feel like, you know, he comes out in every town and cuts a similar promo. But again, I think now the reins are kind of off with the whole MJF thing. So, like, I know there was a lot of rearview mirror booking for how he kind of spent his first couple of months. But I think now that he's into an upper tier feud with MJF, I think a lot of people are going to kind of forget that he kind of had a first couple of months.
I think it really didn't matter what happened. He did the first couple of months simply because, like, you could have put me in the condition I was in at that point in the ring with CM Punk, and it would have drew massive ratings and things like that. Like the match he had, I think it was with Daniel Garcia on Rampage, was talk about a guy who's taken his opportunity and shot that to the moon. Is the guy's 2.0 and Daniel Garcia. Like 2.0, two guys who couldn't make TV when they were in NXT, turn around and then go to AEW, and all of a sudden they're getting TV time with CM Punk and beating him up and you know, getting a shine over him. Like, just amazing. When it comes to Punk, he's gold so far, and that back and forth with him and MJF a couple of weeks ago, I think I messaged you while it was on. It was like, and you weren't watching. And I said, go back and watch that first 20 minutes, because guns of fire, and they were shooting all over the place.
Yeah, no, that was good. Again, I think that was amazing 20 minutes of TV. I think, again, to be that guy, I think the one thing that took away from it a little bit was the WWE references, only because those references have become a little too commonplace on AEW television. I feel like if AEW spent all of their time ignoring that WWE existed, and then they have that promo, I think it takes it to another level. I think the Miz comment, the John Cena references, the Triple H references, I think, to me, like, as someone who watches all of AEW, and you see that literally week in and week out, where they reference the, especially with members of the Elite, and you know, like with, like, you know, now that they brought in guys like Adam Cole and Bobby Fish, and you know, they made several Undisputed Era references, and like, I get it. And I said on Twitter last week, you know, the people who harp on that constantly need to realize that 2021 and 1997 are different worlds. 1997, social media didn't exist. You know, everything was done on TV. The internet was still in its relative infancy. And now when someone makes a reference to the other program, and a great example, right, is the Punk MJF stuff, or the Edge Miz, you know, promo from last week on Raw. And, you know, the stuff that Liv Morgan had mentioned, right, about her friends being fired. And, like, the thing that people need to realize now is that as soon as they do that, everyone runs to the internet.
Yes.
And it creates additional engagement for the product. But for me, I think the AEW needs to pump the brakes on that and save it for these sort of circumstances where it would have additional impact. Again, like, the crowd popped when CM Punk made the Miz reference. But again, because you hear WWE references on AEW programming so often, it wasn't, to me, as big of a point as it could have been if this was less common on their programming. The promo itself was a 11 out of 10. But again, I just, like, that one aspect of it kind of held it back a little bit for me.
I'm going to disagree, and I'm going to tell you why. Because when it comes, starting off with CM Punk, CM Punk doesn't really have a history nationally unless it's WWE. And he has none in the past 7 years, except for a couple of UFC fights, which MJF has mentioned. When it comes to other people and the universe, using that ironically, of AEW, the issue is, for a long time, WWE was wrestling. And all of those guys, with the exception of Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and guys like that, and the Four Pillars and the new guys, everybody knows they were in WWE. And that's where their history is. So to bring it up acknowledges the past, why this person is important, things that have happened, what is could happen in later times. I think it builds it and makes it feel more real world than where, say, WWE doesn't mention anything on the outside, because everything is within the WWE universe. Well, I think Tony Khan and AEW is trying to make it real world. We're in the middle of it. Please consider us in the mainstream.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like, I think it's okay to have different ways to look at that. Again, like, you know, it's just, I don't necessarily, like, I'm definitely not running to the Twitter machine with the pitchforks like some people are. Like, I see on Twitter, or I see some of these wrestling community guys on TikTok that absolutely hate it. But again, I think those are a lot of people who look through the Monday Night Wars through rose-colored glasses and totally forget that that was 24 years ago. And we do not live in the same world now that we did then, right? And you can't really compare what is happening now. I know we live in a world where everybody wants to compare everything to something that happened previously because you want to, quote-unquote, remember the good old times. But, like, this is nothing like 1997. It will be nothing like 1997. This is not the Monday Night Wars. WWE is in a different place, much, 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 much different place than they were then. AEW is not WCW. Like, this, again, there is, other than the fact that this is two wrestling companies that are competing for your eyeballs, that's the only similarity between then and now. And I think, again, you know, because there's so many different avenues to engagement. I mean, back then, the only way to engage somebody was they were in your live crowd or they were watching on TV. That's it. Now, you have so many different ways to engage with people. You can engage with them on 20 different social media platforms. You know, you can draw them in through watching BTE on YouTube, or by watching Dark Elevation or Dark on YouTube. You know, the network is a thing. You know, WWE has some of the most followed social media channels in the world. Again, and all of that stuff gets clicks and likes and engagement. And just like any social media business, engagement has a certain turnover rate that will convert those people into consumers of your product. So every time somebody mentions, you know, the other company, again, the clicks go up, the likes go up, the shares go up, the engagement goes up.
Two things. Number one, wrestling TikTok is a dumpster fire.
Yep.
Number two, to prove your point, how I kept up on AEW while I was in the hospital was on YouTube, because they post so many clips of what happened on both Rampage and Dynamite. I didn't have to watch. I didn't have to go out of my way to watch the show, because I could watch the clips and get what happened. And it's not just the main event that I'm getting clips of. It's every segment I'm getting clips of.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's move on to our next award winner, I guess we'll call it. Let's do the worst match of this year. Ooh. And Coach, I'll let you go first.
All right, I might get some heat for this one from you especially. But my worst match of the year was Randy Orton against Bray Wyatt, The Fiend, from WrestleMania Night 2. I think, and again, a lot of things have happened to both of these characters, and Alexa Bliss included. So all of the people involved in this since then, right? Bray Wyatt has moved on. You know, he was struggling with a lot before that, right? Because of, you know, John Huber's death. And, you know, he's been, like, it's been very openly documented, right, that he was not in a good place mentally. He's no longer with the company. He's not doing anything in wrestling right now. He may never do anything in wrestling ever again. But in a vacuum, this match was absolute hot dog water. The match was bad. The story was bad. The ending was bad. On a weekend where we were celebrating the return of fans, you know, in that capacity in Tampa with 25,000 people there, it just sucked. It sucked. But again, the match sucked. The story sucked. The result was dumb. Nothing that has happened in this storyline after that made any sense whatsoever. A couple weeks later on TV, like, Randy Orton set Alexa Bliss on fire. Right? Like, you know, it's just, I hated it. I hated every minute of it. And, you know, to me, when I think of worst match of the year, you have to somewhat incorporate, like, the story into it, because I think so much of matches nowadays are storytelling, especially on the WWE side. There was nothing redeemable about this at all.
Can you confirm for me that we have not talked and shared each other's lists?
We haven't.
And mine list has been done, put in an envelope in a mayonnaise jar out on the deck for the past 72 hours. So nobody has seen my list.
Yes, mine was typed on a computer and saved and password protected, and then I accidentally deleted it, and then I had to go all the way to the CSIS group to get it recovered.
Okay, so worst match of the year for me was The Fiend versus Randy Orton at WrestleMania. And the reason why is, I think for me, as somebody who was the hugest fan of Bray Wyatt from the first time I laid eyes on the gimmick on NXT, even through the Fiend stuff and him getting screwed by the Goldberg Express and all of that, through getting burned and everything else, to see it end with a whimper like that, not knowing that that was the end. Suspecting through different sources and that he wasn't in a good place. You could tell he wasn't in decent shape. As you said, the death of Brody Lee was tough on him. They were in a group together for a lot of years, and Brody was somebody who was a friend and of everybody. One of my favorite stories is one time in Mexico, they realized that Brody didn't have any merchandise. So they went, and the entire locker room went and got Yeah, Yeah, Yeah t-shirts made up. And they all wore them and got pictures taken of them on that loop. To see it end like that, and to go back to the Brody thing, even in that match, the one close-up of the Fiend that you get is him doing Brody's kiss on the hands and going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then Alexa Bliss pops out of a box and gets black goo on her face, and Randy Orton RKOs him into retirement. You're right. It was nothing. There was nothing to it beforehand. Yeah. There was nothing to it after. Them trying to give Alexa Bliss Bray Wyatt's gimmick was
stupid.
If we had a worst promotional gimmick category, that would have been mine.
Hey, we still have the worst idea category.
Yes, it's true. Oh no, I got a doozy for that one. Listen, I am ready. I'm ready for that.
That's the one. But I made reference before the show that there was one particular one where I may get a little bit amped up, and the worst idea one is that one for me. But anyway.
All right. Well, I'll go first on that one.
Yeah. You're right. Like, go another direction. If Bray Wyatt is, and I mean, I get it. It's WrestleMania, right? You got the crowd there. You need to find some sort of way to finish this off. But, like, just don't have the match. Figure something else out. He's Bray Wyatt. Like, he's a supernatural being at this point as the Fiend character.
Figure you have something burned out. Him alive.
Yeah. Go another direction. And again, I think ultimately for me, it's sad that that's how it ended for Bray Wyatt in WWE. Like, that's the sad part for me, is that was how he went out.
You want to know what the sad part of it is to me? Is that happened. The WrestleMania was in April of last year. He got released in what, September, like August, September, like in that ballpark. Yeah. In January coming up, there is a action figure of the burned Fiend coming out. I mean.
Yeah. What else?
I get lead times in that, but, and apparently the guys that are working on the next video game are pulling their hair out over all these releases, because every time they get the list ready of all the superstars that are going to be in the video game,
yep,
then a bunch get released.
Yep.
So they keep having to push back the drop dead date for the video game.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
Oh, can I give you a little bit of a branding tale here? Happened to me a couple days ago here.
Sure.
So I'm in my room and I'm watching TV and I'm watching, I forget what it was, a vlog or something, a toy watch or something. Because I've gotten into, in this time, I've gotten into Ethan Page's YouTube channel and Major Wrestling podcast, their YouTube channel, where they do the toy walk around. So my nephew, he's 7 years old, and his name is Peter. He comes in and he looks up and he goes, watches the TV. He says, "Oh, Uncle Chris, you're watching WWE Superstars." 7 years old, never watched a wrestling show in his life. That's the power of branding, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep, it is right there. I agree.
Speaking of branding, let's go to our worst idea, and I'm going to go first. NXT 2.0.
Ooh, hey, we have different answers. I love it.
Woohoo! If the old man and podcast Pritchard have never done anything wrong in their lives, this would be enough to put them to the gates of hell. For me, personally, they have taken everything I enjoyed about the old black and gold NXT and burned it to the ground. To put superstars and make it a true developmental territory, which I get. You need to develop future stars, but you don't develop future stars, in my opinion, on national network television. If you want to do that, use the old Memphis OVW system and get these guys ring time. Don't show them. But Braun Breaker had a War Games match. He's had 11 matches in his career. One guy headlined War Games, which we can't call them takeovers anymore. He's had 3 matches in his career, and he's in a War Games match as part of the 2.0 team. It's ridiculous. It's craziness, and I can barely watch it. This past Tuesday night, we've said goodbye to Kyle O'Reilly. Don't be surprised for him to show up as part of the, well, we can't call them an Undisputed Era, so we'll call them the, I don't know, Amazing or the Amazing Super Friends or something like that. Like, he'll show up on AEW, and Johnny Gargano might be there too. So they've burned NXT Black and Gold to the ground, and in its place rose the Phoenix of NXT 2.0, and I couldn't change the channel quick enough. Rant over.
I think what the most, and I mean, I agree, it's not mine, but I'll get into that in a second. But I think the idea has stunk, and I think the hilarious part about it is that they put the belt on Ciampa, though. Like, yeah. Let's turn the page and pass the torch, but not with the strap, because God forbid we do that. And now they have
like the big bad Bodie nephew is getting that real quick.
He will. And real I agree. I think, again, when you look at everything WWE has done, right, it's from a conscious business decision. And it is not good business when your supposed developmental brand is the most exciting part of your company, which NXT was very clearly for a long period of time. It was the most watchable program they had. It was the most exciting program they had. It was the best program that they had. You know, when the Undisputed Era was running roughshod and, you know, you had Gargano and Ciampa and just the laundry list of names of people who were putting on great matches and having a great show every Tuesday night. And every time they did a takeover, it was better than the main roster stuff. For a company that is concerned about profits, that's a problem. So a lot of that, I think, was necessitated just from the fact that you have to cut them down a peg, and we'll see where it goes from here. But I agree, it's not good.
How many times did we sit down at these microphones or just over text or something say, on pay-per-view weekends, the takeovers outdid the main roster shows?
Almost every single time.
The one main roster show that the NXT was on, which was a Survivor Series a couple of years ago, NXT won that. They booked NXT to win that match.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. I take that back. That is incorrect because Roman Reigns pinned Keith Lee at the end. But right. let's talk about Keith Lee, Adam Cole, Bobby Fish. He's Jonah Rock now, but he was Bronson Reed. Like, he was a champion and then 2 weeks later was released. They released one half of the tag team champions and not the other half.
Karrion Kross.
Oh wow. Forgot about him.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
He went from ass kicker on NXT, and he's not everybody's cup of tea. But he went from being the ass kicker on NXT with the smoke show of a manager and an amazing entrance to being in painted over demolition gear on Raw for 2 weeks, and then he's history.
Yep.
Scarlett was on Twitter the other day because they're releasing an action figure of her. She said, I had one match in WWE and three action figures.
Yeah.
You know, like it's. I get it.
Confusing.
Well, it's confusing. And a part of it, too, is you don't have a wrestling guy who's running the show now. Vince, while everybody says Vince is the last stop, everybody is saying Nick Khan, no relation to Tony, is the one behind all of these releases trying to get profits up for the shareholders, which is the problem of a public company. And the difference is they could run me and you as the main event and still make money for now.
Yeah.
Because they have locked in TV deals for the next 2 or 3 years.
Right. Oh, yeah, I agree.
All right. So now I'm really sure my rant is over and I'm ready for your worst idea of the year.
My worst idea of the year is the Survivor Series egg angle. Listen.
Okay. Can you explain to me what it was? Because I missed this completely.
Okay. So backstory. The Rock has a new Netflix movie out. Ryan Reynolds is involved. I haven't watched it because I don't watch movies. But essentially, it's a crime-solving, crime-spree-ish movie. And in the movie, this egg is either stolen by The Rock or protected by The Rock. I don't know. But the angle, how it made its way to WWE, is apparently The Rock gave Vince the egg. And then the egg was stolen from Vince's office Survivor Series.
And this happened during the pay-per-view where they talked about nothing but The Rock, and The Rock didn't show up, right?
Yeah, so I'm going to get to that. Listen, don't steal my thunder. Because I'm going to heat it as this worst idea goes on. Okay. But to wrap up the egg piece, because my heat with it is not just with the egg piece, but the egg was still stolen. And then on Monday Night Raw, Vince said, if anybody finds the egg, they'll get a WWE title match. Austin Theory ends up being the guy with the egg, saying he was trying to impress Vince, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes out and loses in the main event to Big E for the title. And now that has now spawned this Vince father figure, Austin Theory storyline that I'm sure will go nowhere because Vince will be off TV in 2 weeks or Austin Theory is going to get fired. Anyway, my issue with why this was the worst idea. It was the 25th anniversary of The Rock's debut. You spent the whole week running Rock programming on the network. There was a battle royal named after the debut of The Rock, which ended up being a giant advertisement for pizza. You had the whole show with Rock's best moments. You had the egg from Rock's recent movie. The only thing you were missing was The Rock. You led everybody to believe that The Rock was going to make an appearance on this show. And it came out in the dirt sheets and whatnot that there was a scheduling thing. You know, he ended up having to quarantine, blah, blah. If you're not sure that the talent can appear, don't advertise the damn talent. Now, they never did advertise The Rock, but they built the entire weekend, their entire week of programming on the network. The whole entirety of the Survivor Series was built around The Rock. And then he didn't show up. Let's not even think about the fact that the pay-per-view was absolutely horrible. But you built the whole show around The Rock's debut. You had this egg thing. It was just, again, it left a bad taste in my mouth. And I knew, that's the best part, is you knew there was no way The Rock was going to appear. But they sold it so much. And then this, you had this stupid angle with this dumb egg in what? An effort to get Vince on TV? Like,
ratings are down. We got to get a McMahon back on TV.
Like, the whole thing to me was peak 2021 WWE. That's the sad part. You can look back at that whole Survivor Series weekend and the Monday Night Raw that followed and be like, yep, that's exactly what I thought was going to happen. But it was a horrendous idea. Now, my rant is also over.
Okay. Well, listen, that was a good rant because, again, I kind of missed a lot of the whole egg thing. But from your description of it and the things I've read in The Observer and things like that, you know, they almost as if with teasing The Rock and all that, it was almost as if they were trying to do what AEW did with Punk's debut, only they messed it up at the finish line by having the guy show up.
Here's the thing, right? And I can't remember. It might have been a Bischoff podcast or whatever, where he was going on one time, and you know, he said we got to the end, and there was no talent. We built around the talent, and then all of a sudden, the talent was not there. That's the whole key piece. You don't build an entire pay-per-view around somebody who may or may not be there. That's the risk reward of using a part-time performer with name recognition. Again, imagine in that situation, The Rock comes out at the end of Survivor Series. It would have blown the roof off of the place.
Especially because I think it was Roman Reigns that was standing triumphant at the end of that show, wasn't it?
Yep. And yeah, because he had beat Big E and title versus title. And that's the thing is that...
Because of course you're going to beat Big E.
It would have been, you know, in contention for moment of the year because the pop would have been crazy. The tension between The Rock and the head of the table, Roman Reigns, right? Building towards what everybody wants to see, which is The Rock absolutely kicking Roman Reigns' ass.
Oh, you right? don't think that's what's going to happen?
I'm just saying that's what people want. That because at this point, you hate Roman Reigns so much. That's what you want to see happen. Everybody was robbed of that, and it's all because of this dumbass egg. Was the egg supposed to be Rock's replacement? If so, that makes it a word. If somebody somewhere said, guys, Dwayne's not going to be here, but we have the egg. So, like, it should be fine. And then now Dwayne is in Fortnite. Maybe that's why he couldn't be in WWE, because he's in Fortnite.
When I was, because I was kind of in and out during this time. And I read on Twitter or something that night about Vince and the egg. I was pictured, because I didn't get the Rock thing or the movie deal. I was thinking it was the big egg from, like, the gobbledygooker come out of. Which would have been better by the sounds of it.
It would have had the potential to be better.
Can we just talk about where people thought that the guy that turned out to be the Undertaker was thought to be coming out of the gobbledygooker egg at one point? Can you imagine the change? There is a dimension out there somewhere where Mark Callis comes out of the gobbledygooker egg. Yeah, I want to see Disney Plus do I want to see Disney Plus do that. Like, the what if the Mark Callis comes out of the gobbledygooker egg, and what happens to WWF at the time?
I'd watch it.
Oh, of course. Up next, it's our most hated, and I think my choice is number one with a bullet here. There's only one guy.
Yep.
It's Maxwell Jacob Friedman. Yeah. That's it.
We don't need
to talk about this.
Best heel in wrestling, in terms of making you hate them. Does exactly what he should be doing. I think the sky is the limit for MJF as a bad guy. The whole Pinnacle faction made you hate him even more. The Diamond Ring makes you hate him. Wardlow makes you hate him. There's literally nothing redeemable about MJF. And again, most hated is not a bad category. It's a good category. Because the whole idea of good guys and bad guys is that you got to hate the bad guys. And there is nobody that is more easy to hate than MJF. Easy.
Last week's Dynamite, as we tape this, like, is there anything more weaselly than saying, like, talking crap about somebody's dog and then running to the back and here comes the big pit bull Wardlow to get in between it while MJF is, you know, hey, I got you from behind the wall that is Wardlow.
It's
the minute that Wardlow turns on MJF and beats the living snot out of him.
Wardlow will be the most over guy in wrestling.
Yeah. They'll be throwing the babies in the air.
Yeah. I think, again, there's been a lot made about MJF and his contractual status, right, in the news recently. And, you know, that people commenting on the bidding war that will likely ensue for his services. He is going to end up being one of the most highest paid people in wrestling. Because, again, in an era where generating heat and being a loathed heel is more difficult than ever, you know, again, because of things like social media and the 24/7 access that we often have to these people, he has made it so natural to hate his guts, and any promotion would be made stronger by having MJF be that uber bad guy to help put people over.
I'm booking. You know, you talk about guys who think they're God's gift to booking. I'm not God's gift to booking, but I'm not Judas either. I want MJF to sign with AEW again. I want it to be a long-term contract for one angle and one angle only. And that is -1's 18th birthday party in the ring. Everybody in the company is in the ring. They're celebrating -1 finally turning 18 and being able to sign his AEW contract. And here comes MJF out of the tunnel.
That is some long-term fantasy booking right there.
Book it.
I mean, hey, I'm here for it.
Yeah. Can you? They may not be able to do that in front of a crowd.
No,
that one might, because if
they
you
they might burn the place down.
If you did that, and you everybody knew that, hey, I'm gonna get rough here, and MJF does his MJF thing, that could be a riot.
Yep, I agree.
But that's yes, that is long term booking. You can't turn him face. He's the only guy you can't turn face.
Yeah.
Name me another heel that won't, hasn't been, or can't be turned face.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100% on that one. He's a most hated. I mean, consensus across the board.
So if you're going to talk most hated, up next we're going to talk about the most popular. I'll let Coach go first.
Okay. Well, this was probably the hardest one for me. I think because of, and we talked about this before the show, because of my very AEW heavy list, I really tried to balance this one out and really considered some different options. But ultimately, to me, and again, I consider storyline build to be part of someone's popularity. So for me, most popular is Hangman Adam Page. And again, I think a lot of that has to do with the expected culmination of his journey towards the AEW championship and how his story has been told over the last 2 years. You know, again, it's funny to me, but you talk about long-term booking. You look back at the original All In poster, the one where they did the first AEW event. The four guys on the poster are the first four AEW champions. So this was like the first pay-per-view that they did after the company had formed. Maybe it was called All Out, the first one. But the
Double or Nothing.
Yeah, so maybe it was the first All Out that they did, which would have been in 2019, September. I think. Right? Yeah. The four guys on the poster are Jericho, Moxley, Omega, and Hangman Adam Page. The first four AEW world champions. That is long-term booking right there. The result of Hangman's journey surprised nobody. But the trials and tribulations along the way and, you know, him sort of becoming the de facto leader of the Dark Order, who were a lost group after Brody Lee died suddenly. And, you know, it's just everything he did along the way made you want to see his character succeed more. When he came out, you know, at the end of the Battle Royal, I mean, the roof blew off the Jehovah's Place. And again, everybody knew he was going to beat Kenny, but you wanted to see him do it. You were invested in it. They did. Not many performers can reach a level of popularity that high without good booking and good storytelling. And the storytelling that they have done over the last 2 years, and even pre-AEW, you know, when you start looking at Bullet Club stuff, all built towards that moment. And the reaction of people, you know, on the internet, on the show, watching the show, in advance of the show, that's popularity to me. So that's why I picked Hangman Adam Page.
If Kenny Omega had beat Adam Page at Full Gear, they would not have been able to get him and Don Callis out of there with a helicopter.
No.
Like, it's, I mean, again, I don't think there's any conversation. I think it's because he's on, that's my list too. He's on most popular for me is Hangman Adam Page. And for all the reasons.
Yeah, I think you could have made, like, I think some of these awards I wish we would have did, like, an honorable mention. Because, again, I think, for me, right, I was really hoping that you would have said Big E, because I feel like Big E deserves a little bit of credit for the popularity that he has right now. And again, kind of the same reason, right? But, like, it's just, yeah. Again, you can't, to me, Page's popularity is just that much more because of the better booking.
He blew the roof off the building wearing a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man costume. Like, yeah, when he took that head off,
that was it.
The place popped. Like, and it's like, and again, I thought that was a drug-induced fever dream. But no, Adam Page really wore a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man costume and got cheered for it. Like, it, you're right. It's long-term booking, and it's exactly, every beat was what it should have been. I'm glad it didn't happen earlier, because it, remember, it was actually booked for the pay-per-view that Christian Cage got the shot, but Adam went out for paternity leave.
Yeah.
So, and yes, Big E, listen, I'm a New Day mark. I love the New Day and everything that they do. Xavier Woods doesn't, I don't care how much he gets paid, it's nowhere near enough. And it's going to be a sad day when his contract comes up, because I don't think he's signing another one. He's, and not to go to AEW, to go to G4 to do more there.
Yeah.
He's got a Nickelodeon show he's just finishing up. He could start.
I think his future is outside of wrestling.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And he's, a few things that I have watched him on G4, he's hauling out the wrestling shirts. I noticed it was a Brody Lee tribute shirt and then a Danhausen. And by the way, are you aware of this Danhausen guy?
Yep.
Like, I was not really until, like, I had heard the name, and he's kind of a meme on Twitter and that, but talk about a guy who's come out of nowhere this year is him, and without being on a national platform, like, just amazing. And then talking about Adam Page again, what he did with the Dark Order, because I'm a huge Dark Order fan too, and being able to bring those guys up, like, John Silver is better for being associated with Adam Page. Like, for a long time, Dark Order was Evil Uno, Stu Grayson, maybe Colt Cabana, and then everybody else. But now Johnny Hungy, you know, like, he's getting a shot against Danielson tonight as we tape this, and he's going to get his head kicked in, but he's also going to throw Danielson around a little bit and get a bit of that shine, which I think he's one of the guys that, he may never be a main event guy in AEW, but he's going to be one of those guys that's going to be around, and maybe after a secondary title, you know, in a couple of years, once some of the guys that were there at the start, their contracts are coming up soon. Yeah. So we may be seeing the end of the Joey Janelas and Sonny Kisses and Marco Stunts and that crew, although Stunt might get to stick around because of his association with Jurassic Express. Yeah. But those guys are taken off, or will be wished well in their future endeavors once their contracts are up.
Right.
And then all the guys that have already been there, plus you're going to have, I think, O'Reilly's coming in, maybe Gargano, you know, and a few others that may be coming in once their 30 days or 90 days are up. It's going to be interesting to see what AEW does. I'm not somebody who worries about a roster bloat for AEW, because they move people in and out so well, and guys can go to Dark or Dark Evolution for a couple of months and then be brought back to the main shows and kind of get that rest. They're really good at bringing guys in and out. I guess the number one person I think of in that situation is Riho.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And Shida as well. She lost the title and really, for the most part, has spent a lot of time on Dark and Dark Elevation, and then maybe in a month or two, you see her kind of getting back into the to the cards.
Yep.
And I, while we're looking at, I'm looking at our things, one thing we did forget, or maybe we'll be able to do this off the top of our head, is Women's Wrestler of the Year.
Yes, that was something that we kind of, I think maybe we didn't include it because it's so painfully obvious who it is. But yeah, that for, I mean, you got, to me, the only option is Dr. Britt Baker.
Yeah.
I think that, I think again, on a list where we've agreed a lot, that one everyone should agree on. You can't make a case for anybody better than Dr. Britt Baker, with the exception of maybe Bianca Belair. But again, I think it's hard given how weakly Bianca was booked after Becky's return. You know, Dr. Baker carried the women's division at AEW. Again, I've gushed many a times about her start and then her stop when they realized that she wasn't everything that she needed to be. And then her ascent again. She is women's wrestling at AEW. She is the benchmark. She's been great for that division. She's her match quality has gotten so much better. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Her Ty Conti from
that was a slobber knocker of a match. That was great match. That was to me. Yeah. I'll be, not to spoil anything for later, but that made the short list for me for match of the year. Like, because it was so good. But yeah, for me, Britt Baker, easily the women's wrestler of the year.
And it's so, it's interesting too, where WWE has kind of set things back to 2018 with Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch, when they have so much, so many greater, the greater is not the word, different talents under contract. Bianca Belair. And Liv Morgan's come into her own. And nobody has seen what Viper, Piper Niven, Doudrop can really do. I hope they give her an actual name soon. But, like, nobody's seen what she can actually do yet. Her run on NXT UK was mind-boggling. Kaylee Ray, she's someone that deserves a spot on the main roster, because she's so good, but I don't know if she'll ever get there because of age and what is expected of the women's division now. I don't know if she'll ever make it there. Like, it's interesting. And I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, NXT UK or NXT 2.0 has kind of put a damper on the women's division. Am I correct in saying that? Like, they just don't seem to be making news.
Yeah, I think they've done some interesting things with their women's division down there. It doesn't really seem to be, you know, a focus for their programming, so to speak. I think,
that being said, I mean, I'm going to admit that I am not up on NXT 2.0, but I just look at what has happened there. And I don't recognize a lot of names.
It wasn't, I mean? Like, they did give a nice reset to Mandy Rose.
Yes, I did see that.
You know, again, who's the current women's champion. It did give a nice opportunity to hit the reset button on Mandy Rose, who was just floating around aimlessly on the main roster. So, I mean, that in that sense, I think it's been good. But, yeah, I mean... the WWE women's scene is in shambles at the moment, and I think it has been as such since the moment Becky returned at SummerSlam and squashed Bianca Belair in about 10 seconds.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
All right. So next up, I have Show of the Year, and I think we might agree on this one as well.
Yeah, I really don't think there's a debate on this at all. I really think this is about as cut and dry as it gets.
Yeah, it's AEW Full Gear.
Wow.
Oh.
Wow. Okay. Go ahead. Let's talk about this.
It was down to two for me. and they were both AEW shows, and it was Full Gear and All Out. And the only reason I went with Full Gear is because it really was down to a game of inches for me, and that it was the Paul White QT Marshall match on All Out that knocked it down a notch below for me.
Well, I mean,
like that honestly was the difference. I looked at the cards and went, there was no filler on Full Gear. All Out had White Marshall, which to me is a filler match. Like on All Out, even the pre-show match was a banger. Like it was that, was it 8 or 10 man tag with Jurassic Express and Christian Cage and that crowd. Like that was a banger of a match. And then Full Gear, it was nonstop.
I mean,
All Out had the debuts of Danielson and Cole and Punk's first match back. And yeah. I understand that. But I think match quality wise, for me, it was Full Gear.
So for me, my wrestling show of the year is WWE Survivor Series. I'm kidding.
Jesus, like, Murphy.
Okay, so here's the thing. So I went with All Out, and I'm going to explain why.
Okay.
I think, to me, what I look for in terms of a event of the year, it has to be a combination of wrestling moments, surprises, intrigue. I do agree. If you're looking at it just based on pure wrestling alone, Full Gear was the better card. I agree with that 100%. I think Full Gear was great. I think, again, we already talked about Britt Baker, Tay Conti was great. CM Punk and Eddie was great. I think, again, to say that there was no filler, we literally had Dan Lambert in the semi-main event in a street fight. That match could have gone away.
Yeah, but he wasn't single.
I know. It wasn't Paul White versus QT Marshall. I agree. Yeah. But, like, again, right? I think Full Gear had the better wrestling card. I think All Out had a great wrestling card. You had the steel cage match for the tag team championships. Miro and Eddie Kingston was a great match. Moxley Kojima was good. CM Punk and Darby Allin was good. Omega and Christian Cage was good. But when you package in Minoru Suzuki, Ruby Soho, Adam Cole, Bryan Danielson, all debuting in a surprise nature on the same show, that's the difference maker to me. Because that's what everybody was talking about the next day. You had, like, even just the 10 minutes that occurred after the main event, with Adam Cole coming out to a massive ovation, everyone thinking he's going to turn on the Elite, he super kicks Jungle Boy, like, you know, and it's like, oh man, the band is back together. Here we go. And then Danielson comes out and you're like you already were not sitting down, but now you're jumping in place and flailing your arms because, like, what the hell is happening? Right. You know, Ruby Soho making a debut as the Joker in the Casino Battle Royale was great. Again, if you're a fan of Minoru Suzuki and Japanese wrestling, I know you popped when Suzuki came out. Don't pretend you did it.
Oh no, I did. I watched that show with non-fans.
Yeah.
Because I watched it with my girlfriend, my brother, and my sister-in-law. As well, the sister-in-law fell asleep on the love seat, but whatever. And when Minoru came out, all I could say was "Murder, Grandpa." And my brother looked at me like I was crazy. But when I definitely popped when he came out. I popped when the former Ruby Riot, Ruby Soho, came out. Definitely when Adam Cole came out. And then when Danielson came out, I'm just like, I'm done. Like, I just can't. Like, I need a glass of water, a sandwich, and a cigarette. Like, at this point.
And I want to be clear. I think for me, it was between All Out and Full Gear. And again, I think it's the difference between those two shows is really a matter of what you enjoy as a fan, right? Again, if you like the straight up and down, you know, matches, what happens in the ring, and that's what you're looking for some great in-ring stuff, Full Gear is the better card. I mean, plain and simple, it is. There wasn't a bad match on Full Gear. There were some bad matches on All Out. Again, Paul White and QT Marshall sucked. Britt Baker and Chris Statlander was a great match. I don't think it was as good as Baker and Conti by any stretch of the imagination, but it was a good match. And I mean, definitely don't go looking at Meltzer's 4-star rating for Baker and Statlander, because I don't think it was anywhere close to that.
Statlander. I like Britt Baker, and I'm a Statlander fan. But those two seem to have something. There's just something that doesn't mesh with the two of them, because there was a bunch of botches in that match.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Omega and Christian Cage doesn't have the same appeal in the main event as Omega and Paige. But again, I think given that Paige was on a paternity leave, like you talked about earlier, but again, I think we're splitting hairs in all reality. I think the conversation for show of the year starts and ends with the most recent two AEW pay-per-views. I don't think anything else is even in the same stratosphere of consideration as All Out and Full Gear. I think really the difference between the two just comes down to which one you enjoyed more personally. I think both of them were amazingly awesome events. And that's, you know, which one you preferred. I think really you're splitting hairs at that point anyway.
AEW didn't have a miss on pay-per-view this year.
I disagree.
Okay. What was their miss? Because I'm forgetting something then.
I think,
and I mean entire shows. I don't mean like that match was bad or something like that.
I think that, and I got to remember, because I want to make sure I say the right one, because otherwise people are going to make fun of me in the comments. I think Revolution could have been better. I think Revolution was kind of cemented by the whole exploding barbed wire deathmatch fiasco at the end. I wasn't a big fan. Revolution for me, I think, was a step down. I don't think it was a miss. But I think, again, when you compare it to All Out and Full Gear, it's not even in the same conversation.
Oh, no. Revolution is definitely at least number three there. Yeah.
Maybe calling it a miss is a bit strong. But again, I just think maybe that's because Full Gear and All Out were so good that nothing else could come anywhere close to living up to that.
Yeah, like I'm looking at the card for Revolution here now, and yeah, it's definitely a weaker card than those two.
Yeah, but Double or Nothing as well was nothing super special, right? You had Omega, Cassidy, and Pac in the main event. Wasn't even the main event. The main event was the Stadium Stampede match between the Pinnacle,
Wheeler, Herwood,
and Jericho's band of Mary Dingleberries. But yeah, like again, I just think, you know, those were great. Those were good pay-per-views. Double or Nothing was good. Revolution was good. But they set a new benchmark at All Out, and they continued that benchmark at Full Gear. And again, I think those two pay-per-views are head and shoulders way above anything else that we've seen in the last 12 months.
Double or Nothing had Cody Rhodes and Anthony Ogogo.
Ooh, baby.
And then Ogogo disappeared.
He came back last on Dark this week.
Just come back on Dark, yeah.
Yeah, he's back.
And one thing I do like about AEW is that they have these special cards. I like they name their regular shows. Like, we have winter is coming. We have, there's going to be the holiday bash over the Christmas and New Year's. Battle for the Belts is going to be their Clash of the Champions version coming up for show on January 8th. Like, they're doing great on the branding side and really haven't had, like, okay, the exploding death match barbed wire was a dud, and but they didn't come out and try to say it was anything else. Like,
no.
They own, when something goes wrong, they kind of own that stuff, which I think is nice. And when it comes to show of the year, Full Gear and All Out, neither one of us is wrong.
No.
Like, it's literally a game of inches between those two. And there was no WWE show that was any higher than fifth on a list.
I'm looking at the list of what I have left, and I'm like, I feel like maybe we might start getting into some areas where we have differences, but I am concerned that we should have just had one list and just called it good.
Well, how about your feud of the year?
Hey, finally something WWE can win. So my feud of the year is Edge versus Seth Rollins. The trilogy of matches that they have had recently. I think, again, you know what? For me, maybe it has to do with the fact that I am a massive Edge mark. That I love just about anything that he does. But I think the trio of matches that Edge has had with Seth Rollins in recent memory, the SummerSlam match. They also had a great match on SmackDown. They also had a Hell in the Cell match at Crown Jewel, which I thought was phenomenal. I thought Edge and Seth Rollins on the Hell in a Cell or the Crown Jewel was head and shoulders the best match on that card, and it wasn't close. I love Edge. I love Seth Rollins. I think they're both ridiculously, amazingly talented performers that are easily two of the best talents WWE has. And to put them together, you know, over the course of 2 months and watch them go through those three matches, one of which was on free TV, the other two, which occurred, you know, on network pay-per-view events. I loved it. I thought they were great. I thought the intensity of them was unreal. I mean, for me, I can't think of two guys that had better feudal chemistry this year than Edge and Seth Rollins.
Yeah, I can't argue with that, although I did have a different answer.
Oh, good.
And my answer was Roman Reigns versus the world.
Ooh. It's like borderline cheating.
Listen, anybody he went up against this past year, acknowledge him. And it could be anybody. It could be the guy in the front row. It could be the ring announcer. It could be anybody on the roster. It could be Vince McMahon. He could feud with anybody because all he has to say is acknowledge me.
Yeah.
And I mean, him and Brock Lesnar coming up at day one, which, by the way, can we say thank you for the creative geniuses at WWE for coming up with that name for a pay-per-view?
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah, day one. Royal Rumble will be day 23.
I can't wait. Just name all the pay-per-views by the day of the year they happen on.
Yeah, WrestleMania, day 123.
Yep.
Because it'll feel that long by the time the show's over.
Yep.
but Roman Reigns, just against anybody, and finally putting the Bloodline together as an official faction.
Yeah.
I
can't hate on your answer. I don't have to agree with it, but I don't hate it.
And having Paul Heyman as their mouthpiece, especially with Brock coming back.
Right.
Like, it's just like the one thing, and I know I'm kind of crapping on WWE on this show, but the one thing they got right this year was the Bloodline, and they pretty much fell into that And lucky it didn't blow up when one of the Usos got another DUI.
Yep.
That they brought up on the show.
Yep. Yeah, so, no, I agree. I think it's been, I think the Bloodline and Roman Reigns is easily the best thing that they have going. And yeah, I mean, like I said, it wasn't my answer, but I don't disagree with that at all. I think Roman versus the World has been a compelling thing to watch on WWE television.
And he's got every reason in kayfabes to have a chip on his shoulder, because everybody, he's always been number two to John Cena. He had to take a back seat to Moxley for a while.
Yep.
He had to take a back seat to Seth Rollins. He had to take a back seat to Goldberg. You know, like he's, and finally he decided, you know what? It's me. I'm the guy.
Yeah.
And
this is the heel turn we all, this is the heel turn we all wanted. Right.
I was at your house the day or the night he came out on Raw and said his leukemia was back.
Yep.
And I think I said to you, they'll never turn him heel now. Yeah. And I was wrong.
And it's the
and best they did an amazing job. They've done an amazing job.
I agree.
Now, are we going to fight over match of the year or what?
Well, so we're down to what? We got what? Three left?
Match, tag team, and wrestler of the year. So match, do you want to do our predictions right now and then we'll move to the top three?
Let's go through. Let's do our predictions in sort of shorter form bullet point, because you know,
okay,
we don't want this thing to be 7 hours long. We might lose.
I got them. Nothing but time. What about you?
I have to sleep at some point, but that's not here.
Okay.
There.
All right.
We'll do three.
I'll let you know. I have three predictions for 2022.
I have five, but I'm on the fence on saying one of them out loud.
All right. Well, I'm going to convince you to say that one first then.
Okay. So my prediction number one, this is maybe the most obvious one of all. But Brock Lesnar will obviously get another WWE title run. And I think Randy Orton gets another run as WWE champion as well in 2022.
So do you think we get a chance of Randy Orton and Brock Lesnar both being champions at the same time?
Possibly, yes.
Just a second. Okay, sorry about that. I'm back.
Okay, thank you for vomiting on my predictions. Sure. But I mean, I'm not the one doing the booking. I'm just trying to predict their booking.
Oh, you heard that? I was trying to hit my mute button.
No, you missed.
Oh, sorry.
Oops. All right, your turn.
WWE will sell to Disney or NBC Universal in 2022.
See, I left that off of my list because I expected you to have it on yours.
Yeah, 100%. There is not a doubt in my mind that they are absolutely going for a sale. Vince McMahon, I think it's time for him to cash out. I think maybe there's no easy family to take over now with Triple H having his heart scare, which some people are saying may have been a little bit more serious than we thought at first.
Yeah. I think if you look at the news from the last 24 hours or so, there's a lot of reporting going around that Nick Khan is now going to be the heir apparent of WWE. That was the reason why he was brought in, was to eventually take over from Vince. And, again, that fits the whole we're going to sell the company motive, because the whole reason he is there is to slash expenses and grow revenue and make the company more profitable, which obviously is going to lead to better sale terms. Vince gets to walk away even more rich than he already is. And Nick Khan will pilot this company through a publicly traded, owned by somebody else, de facto CEO Disney run production. That to me seems like the most likely scenario.
It would not shock me if let's say the December pay-per-view of next year will not be on Peacock in the States. It'll be on Disney Plus.
I'm waiting for your next prediction where you say that Triple H will wrestle in AEW in 2022.
No, I didn't go that far.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I won't spoil it then.
No, no. But what I will say is, going back to your Battle Royal over pizza a couple of weeks ago on Raw, I think you're going to see more of that when it comes to like profits and losses on WWE. Mm-hmm. You're going to see more of that native advertising. It just came out today or yesterday that they've signed a deal with White Castle in the States to have a Natalia meal and a Dolph Ziggler meal.
I wouldn't mind myself a Natalia meal.
Oh, jeez. That sounds... Wow.
Sorry.
I feel like I have to report you for that for some reason. But yeah, so you know what? Wouldn't surprise me if next week they're having a match. Natalia's having a match over White Castle hamburgers.
Oh my God.
Remember when Natalia had the farting gimmick? Maybe that'll return.
Yeah.
So again, I think it really comes down to sales and what they want to do. Like, I think they're going to sell. I think McMahon will be getting out of the business. He's going to go have somebody bring him steak wraps and pina coladas at his house in Florida, or maybe he'll buy his own island for the 7 years he's left alive. Did you know Vince McMahon's mother is still living?
I did not.
She is 99 years old.
Oh, good for her.
You will see her when they had Hall of Fames. She would be sitting in the front row with Linda and Shane and Stephanie and that whole crowd. But you would see her in the front row. But so he's got the genes to live a very long time. However, the mixture of steak wraps and Red Bull and Coke in the 80s, allegedly, would say that maybe his heart could explode at any moment.
Yeah, well.
So that's my first long-winded, bullet-pointed version of my first prediction.
Okay, what's your second one?
Triple H will be even less involved in day-to-day operations. The heart scare, along with the really taking down of his pet project of NXT, the ending of the NXT expansion to Mexico and Japan and Africa and India, all those plans being canceled. I don't think Triple H is going to be involved on the business side of it. He won't be back in the ring, I don't think.
Right.
And am I going as far as to say that he's going to show up in AEW next year? No. Would it shock me? No. But I don't think anything that drastic happens as long as Vince, he's married
to Stephanie,
Vince is, I was going to say in charge, but yeah, alive is probably a better term, because he's got no loyalty to Nick Khan from where I'm sitting.
That's right.
But he still does have loyalty. It's his father-in-law and gave him a shot and all that. So I don't think he'd ever do anything to go against the old man. But the minute that he's cold, then maybe you give Tony Khan a call and say, hey, do you got a spot on Dark?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah,
man.
You'll have to put over El Fuego de Sol on Evolution for two.
Oh, my God. My second prediction, probably not a big surprise, but I think Edge will officially retire again in 2022. I don't think they're going to have anything for him. I don't think we're going to get the title run that we all want to see. I think Edge will wrestle into the mid-year, and then he will just ride off into the sunset. He's already in the Hall of Fame. No need to go through with that again. I just think, given all the changes and stuff that we're seeing, the releases, whatever, I just don't think Edge is long for this world. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Beth, right? Beth is no longer going to be part of NXT. So, like, I just think, for me, I think Edge's days in WWE are numbered. Probably, and I think it'll be on his own terms. I don't think they're going to push him away. But I also don't think creatively they're going to have anything for him to do beyond what he's doing now, which is trying to elevate. Again, like, does The Miz really need a feud with Edge to get over? Probably not. But it gives each of them something to do, and it's compelling television. I just think Edge will grow tired of that. I don't think he's going to be back in the main event picture, which I think maybe at this point might be a good thing. But yeah, I think 2022, we see the end of Edge, but at least this time he gets to retire on his own terms.
The old black and gold NXT would have been the perfect place for Edge, because he could have went down there. Like, you talk about needing to elevate guys. Miz doesn't need to be elevated by Edge. Miz is a multiple-time former world champion. Yep. Miz is as high as he's ever going to be, and is really probably, it wouldn't shock me if at the end of 2022 is Miz's swan song. Like, you got to think he's been around
into entertainment a bit.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, no, I can see where Edge calls it a day. And listen, maybe he moves in to a HBK spot. Maybe he moves in to one of those agent spots. You know what I mean? Because that's, you, if you see in the documentaries and stuff like that, that seems to be something he enjoys, is working with young talent and putting matches together and putting finishes together and that. So maybe...
It's only a matter of time before he joins Conrad Thompson's Rolodex, baby.
Oh. Did you read the rumors of Conrad maybe being the money behind another company?
No.
Yes, apparently those rumors are out there that he thinks that there's enough release talent that a third smaller company.
Oh, there. Yeah. They're absolutely,
and he's right.
Oh, 100%.
And I think the success of AEW, maybe you might be able to get an hour on or 2 hours on a network for a decent amount of money.
If only Billy Corgan gave a damn.
Well, you know who else is in on this?
NWA is right there ready to go.
Well, you know who else is in on this? Is Freddie Prinze Jr.
Oh, baby, let's go.
He did an interview or something this past week where he's talking about there's enough talent out there that he's been talking to some networks about, do you guys have any interest in an hour or 2 hours of wrestling for a rights fee? You know, we're not talking big money, but you know, he's not looking to fund it, but he's willing to be the face in front of it.
My third prediction, I know you have three, but I will jumble my three predictions into one because they are all around AEW. I predict that one of Bryan Danielson or CM Punk will have Reigns as the AEW world champion in 2022. I also think that AEW will take a step back in 2022, likely due to roster and creativity issues. Now, what I mean by that is, I think AEW's had a really good formula up until this point, but I think they're going to hit sort of a creative dry patch where they kind of have to think of what the next evolution of AEW is. You know, they've been doing some pretty tried and true storylines along the way. I do think, you mentioned earlier, right, about they have a lot of their original talent that are going to have contracts that are going to be coming up soon. So I think we could see an exodus of some of those key role players that keep Dark and Dark Elevation and, to a certain extent, Rampage afloat in some of those curtain jerker matches. matches and mid-card matches. I think we could see a lot of talent leaving AEW. Again, you know, I don't necessarily think that's a problem, but I do think, again, you could see some turnover. But I do think AEW, and given how strong Full Gear and All Out were, I think we're maybe due for a bit of a valley. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know, think it's going to be enough to turn people off of the company, but I do think you could see them sort of lose a bit of momentum while they sort of find some new footing and maybe kind of shuffle their upper card a little bit. And my third piece to that is I think Kurt Angle will wrestle a match in AEW in 2022. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know who it's going to be against, but I'm telling you right now, Kurt Angle will appear and wrestle a match in AEW.
Huh. That one's out of nowhere for me. I never thought would have thought of that.
Interesting. I think it's going to happen.
Who would you put him in with on the current roster? You know, I bet you him, I don't know, him and Jungle Boy. I would put him in one of the pillars.
Yeah.
But maybe Jungle Boy.
Him and MJF.
MJF does.
Angle says something stupid about MJF on his podcast. And MJF responds with some backhanded comment in a promo on TV, and we're off to the races, baby. All of a sudden, Angle shows up a couple weeks later on Dynamite, you know, because Angle fires back on his next episode of his podcast, and that gets Conrad some clout, gets the clicks going, gets Meltzer all warm and fuzzy on the inside. Then all of a sudden, Angle shows up on Dynamite, and, you know, he gets hurt because that's probably how that's likely to end. But I do think Kurt Angle will wrestle a match in AEW next year. I really do.
Listen, if you would have told me a year ago or a little bit over a year ago that Sting would have been wrestling regularly on television for AEW this year, I would have said you were crazy. So, listen, this is, I have no qualms with that one. My third one has to do with the AEW title as well, and it will be that MJF will win the AEW title in the next year, maybe from Hangman Adam Page. I don't know how much longer you can hold off on him, but I don't.
I think that ties into what I said about possible creativity problems, right?
Yeah.
How long do you keep MJF in the mid-card and upper mid-card before you're starting to piss away the heat that he has? I agree. I think it has to happen sooner rather than later. I just hope that it doesn't feel forced.
Yeah, I do disagree.
That's the one way that you can ruin his heat. Is make his title win feel forced.
Yeah. I do disagree with your prediction of Punk or Danielson winning the title. I don't think that's what they're there for. Just simply because I think.
No, that's fine.
Yeah. I don't think Punk. I'm fine. I'm okay.
But again, right?
Yeah. Did everybody again, listening, did you hear that? Because everybody knows that tone, right? No, I'm okay.
Whatever.
You do what you're going to do. It's fine.
I think here's the thing, right? When they hit, if they hit, again, that's why all of those things sort of go together. If they do hit a rough patch, you know, in terms of creativity and roster composition, what's the most comfortable, safe thing they could do? Put the strap on a recognizable superstar. Again, I don't think, and I would almost hedge my bets and say it will be Danielson. I don't think it will be Punk.
Yeah.
Danielson, of the two, I would tend to say there's a 90% chance it'll be Danielson and a 10% chance it'll be Punk. I just think, again, when push comes to shove and they have a little bit of a blip in the booking, maybe they lose some players on the roster, maybe for a while, in order to help develop some guys and right the ship, you put the strap on Danielson, because you know he can run with the belt, right? Like, again, they don't know what they're going to get at a Hangman Adam Page as champion.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's always the thing. Even though we're not in the 90s anymore, the champion still means something. They have to carry the brand. So I think, again, you have two guys that you know you can put the strap on and they can carry your company for a period of a few months.
Well, I think you know that in Danielson. I'm not 100% sold on Punk, simply because I think that I don't know if you can turn Punk full heel.
Yeah.
And I think in order for them to be champion, they have to be heels. A babyface champion in Punk, I don't think gets you anywhere, but a heel Danielson like he is now,
yeah,
going after Hangman Page, which he's going to, I think Danielson will lose because they're at Battle for the Belt for their match. No, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Their winner is coming. Their winner is coming.
Yeah. It's too early to take the belt off of Page.
Yeah. But, and we know Danielson can get somebody over, and maybe that's where you put in, you change his name to Jungle Jack Perry and you put him in with Danielson and you have Danielson tap to the snare trap and boom, superstar made.
Mm-hmm. That's the next big Hangman Adam Page moment. And I stopped short of including that on my predictions because I think that's more of a 2023 thing. But I think, to me, the next Hangman Adam Page wins the title moment happens with Jungle Boy. I really do. I just think we're a little bit further off from that than a lot of people want to believe.
I think Darby gets it before Jungle Boy does.
I would agree with that. But that's not one of my predictions.
So. No. Well, I can predict match of the year, at least the one on my list.
Let's do it.
Can I give you a 1A that I went back and forth on today while I was doing my list?
Listen, you can do whatever you want.
My 1A was from Wrestling Donkatsu, day two. It was Shingo Takagi defeating Will Ospreay for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. That was 1A. Meltzer rated that match 6 stars, which is a little ridiculous, but was really, really good and was only just below Hangman Adam Page and Kenny Omega from AEW Full Gear in the AEW World Heavyweight Championship.
My, get off the Kool-Aid, man. Oh, my geez. The AEW love is too much.
Listen, I went through the list and I was like, I may be a little AEW heavy here, but the year they had was like, I don't know, like, when was the last time a national company had this kind of year? WCW in 97? Yeah. 96, 97? Like, when at the very first of the NWO, when they couldn't do anything wrong?
Yeah.
Before 3 years later, when they did everything wrong?
Right. So for me, I also went back and forth on two matches. And funny enough, my two matches are not the same as your two matches. So finally, a category where we're very different. So my, like, 1A was from TakeOver 36, Ilya Dragunov against Walter.
You know what? I thought about that real hard today.
Hell of a match. Easily the best WWE match of the year, and it's not even close. Again, great match, great story. The intrigue of it was awesome. Dragunov finally gets to go over. It was phenomenal. But I think, even compared to Kenny and Hangman Adam Page, the match of the year was from All Out. The Lucha Bros against the Young Bucks in the steel cage match for the AEW Tag Team Championships. This match, again, I'm not usually a big fan of cage or cell type matches, but this match blew the absolute socks off of my feet. I think we've talked a lot on this show about how the chemistry between the Lucha Bros and the Bucks was really fun to see early in AEW. They had some hellacious matches early on, right? You know, they did some promotion, you know, even in the build up to AEW. You know, I think the Lucha Bros to me are one of the most underrated pieces of AEW. I don't think they get enough credit for being the rocks that they are in the ring. They've done great work also for AAA. Spoiler alert, they're also my tag team of the year, so I'll just wrap that all into one big Lucha Bros love fest. And this match from All Out was just the culmination of four guys that have amazing chemistry, using the cage effectively, some great spots, some great intrigue. Yeah, I loved this match. I think the moment I watched it, I knew it would be my match of the year. I think Kenny and Hangman was great. And I did a big long Twitter thread about my thoughts about the match. And ultimately for me, it just wasn't better in any way other than the Hangman winning part, than the 5 3/4 star match, according to Mr. Meltzer, between Penta, El Zero Miedo, Rey Fénix, Matt Jackson, and Nick Jackson.
Well, if you go by the stars and do the math, Hangman Adam Page and Kenny Omega was 5.5.
Yeah, so I win.
You 5 3/4 is more than 5.5. So, and 120, and if you do the math by the numbers, Team Taz will win the title. No. listen, I can't argue.
All four matches were amazing. I think, again, all four of those matches are in the top six, I think, or top seven star ratings of the year. So, you know, when you get into that 5-star plus territory, I think, you know, what are you doing at that point? You're splitting hairs. Again, I think it comes down to the same reason why we have differences of opinions with All Out and Full Gear. They're both absolutely phenomenal. It's just a matter of personal preference.
Yes.
And again, I think all four of those matches, if you went back and watched any of them, they're all amazing. You know, again, for me, I just happen to prefer the tag match from All Out.
Yeah, no, definitely. And since you did your tag team of the year, I'll do my tag team of the year as well. Mine's a little controversial. You know, you're a baseball guy, so you'll get this. You know, when the Baseball Hall of Fame stuff happens,
that I hate and rag on constantly about on Twitter.
Yeah. There's always the one guy who's there who gets in, or maybe the Hockey Hall of Fame is probably a better thought process in this, is that there's always the one guy who been on the ballot for a long time and finally gets in. It's like a career achievement. Not Gordie Howe, Mark Howe. He's kind of he's the guy for that.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like the Career Achievement Hall of Fame. Well, I'm kind of doing a Career Achievement Tag Team of the Year, because my Tag Team of the Year is the New Day. Because they can seem to be able to take, and I guess it would be the duo of Kofi and Xavier, because of their ability to take whatever is given to them, make it work, have fun with it, and be one of the few bankable, watchable segments on WWE television. So my tag team of the year is the New Day, and I'll put Big E in there as well because I still consider them a unit. Never mind they're on different shows, because anytime they have a chance to put the three of them together, they're kind of like this generation's DX. We'll do that as many times as we can. And yeah, my tag team of the year is The New Day. And a part of the reason is because I don't think by this time next year we're going to have a functional New Day on WWE television.
Right.
I think depending on contracts.
You didn't want to miss your chance.
I didn't want to miss my chance to blow the Francesca for The New Day.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Because the Lucha Brothers, I'll be honest, the Lucha Brothers were first on my list.
Right.
And then I thought, you know what? Anytime I watch WWE stuff, I enjoy watching The New Day because I always get a laugh or it's always a good match.
They're comfortable. They're comfortable. They're always entertaining. You could throw them together at any time. You know, I mean, Woods and Kofi wrestled together regularly on house shows as well, even though they're not like always together on TV recently. I don't disagree. I think New Day, to me, one of the top five tag teams of all time. They probably, again, now that they're sort of like split up to a certain extent, like he's on his own, you know, as WWE champion and has been on his own for quite a while. They, you know, they've been on again, off again a lot during the pandemic. You know, Kofi had his run, you know, Woods is the King of the Ring, Big E's a heavyweight champion. But again, they're comfortable, they're safe, they're always fun to watch. You could put them together literally anytime. So yeah, I mean, like for me, again, I think it's more of a personal preference thing. I think everything the Lucha Brothers did this year was absolutely amazing. They've had a bazillion great matches this year. They've carried AEW at times, again, during lower periods. You know, I feel like they wrestle constantly on just about every program. They've been on, Dark and...
Yeah, Daly's Place loved the Lucha Brothers.
Yeah, and I mean, again, you know, they're wrestling 50, 60 times this year. You know, again, they're currently tag team champions in AEW. They were tag team champions in AAA. They lost a match this past weekend, actually, to Cash Wheeler and Dax Hardwood, which reports say was a very good match.
I haven't seen the match, but I watched what happened beforehand.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, because their manager in AAA is Vicky Guerrero.
Yeah.
So, and we've gotten through a tag team of the year conversation and not mentioned FTR. That happened in the past couple of years.
Yeah, I think it's good that, you know, because tag team is such a forgotten thing. And I mean, you know, we're probably going to blow it out of the year here when we have an epic battle over who we think the wrestler of the year is. But I don't hate the New Day pick. They weren't really in consideration for me because that's just not kind of where the avenue I went down. But I agree, right? I think it's sort of, they're sort of getting towards the last hurrah for them. So if not now, when?
Yeah. All right, it's time. It's the wrestler of the year. I will go first, as is my option.
Sure thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, he is not from North Carolina. He was the AEW World's Heavyweight Champion. He was the Impact World's Heavyweight Champion. He was the AAA Mega Champion. I think that's all of them. Let me think. I believe that's all. He was mentored by the invisible hand of Don Callis. He is a Canadian icon. If you can watch TSN and see his documentary on 47 times a week, ladies and gentlemen, he is the cleaner, the best bout machine, Kenny, by God, Omega.
You spent all of your words on the preamble?
What else do I need to say? He was the belt collector this year. He had multiple matches that were amazing with guys like Eddie Kingston and Moxley. And as mentioned in my match of the year with Hangman Adam Page, and was entertaining in the with the Space Jam entrance with the Elite. And I'm not the hugest fan of the Elite, but I can look through the goofiness and get to the absolute joy of watching somebody like Kenny Omega.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a good choice. I think Kenny had a really good year. I think, you know, now that he's taking some time off and, you know, going to get himself right. I think what hurts your cause is that his whole title win happened in 2020. So that doesn't really apply here. But
he was the belt collector this year.
That's true. He was. He did collect many belts, right? He beat Sami Callihan for the Impact World Champion, right? I believe it was Sami Callihan that he beat for it.
I think so. It was Sami.
He took it from Rich Swann. He defended it against Sami Callihan.
Rich Swann was the Impact World Champion.
Yes, he was. That was title for title, by the way. Impact title versus AEW title. I think the stuff that he did with Don Callis was great. The reformation and strengthening of the Elite was great. Again, really good year for Kenny Omega. But where I go a different direction is, for me, I start looking at who had the biggest impact on their promotion.
Can I ask you one question? Is your choice, is he from North Carolina?
No, he is not from North Carolina. Okay. Did you just want to do North Carolina again?
I just wanted to do the North Carolina because I don't get the joke, but I love it every time Justin Roberts does.
I know. So, like, I approach it from I actually started with a list of 7 guys. I narrowed it down to 5. I narrowed it down to 3. Kenny Omega was one of those 3. But for me, I look at, again, the guy who had the biggest impact on their promotion, the guy that you tune in to watch every time he's on TV.
Can I guess? Because I know who you're going to say.
So, well, who do you think I'm going to say?
I think you're going to say Roman Reigns.
So for me, you have to look at that part of it, right? And when you look at WWE in the year 2021, the best, most redeeming quality, most redeeming performer, most redeeming wrestler, you want to watch his matches, you want to watch his segments because you want to watch him get beat, you want to watch somebody come out and beat him. To me, 2021 was by far the best year of Roman Reigns' career, and he had the most impact in 2021. And for those two reasons, you can't, again, he is must-watch programming for WWE. When he's in the ring, his mic talents now are amazing. Again, every word that comes out of his mouth, you just hate him more. You wanted to see Edge or Daniel Bryan or both of them kill him at WrestleMania. You wanted to see Brock Lesnar kill him. You wanted to watch John Cena kill him. You want to see Brock Lesnar kill him again. But from the start of the year to the end of the year, the head of the table, the tribal chief, everything he has done has been captivating from an entertainment perspective. And that's not saying that everything that Kenny's done is not. But to me, what the difference is, imagine an AEW where Kenny Omega wasn't in it this year, and imagine a WWE where Roman Reigns wasn't in it this year. Which promotion suffers more from that? It's WWE, and it's not close. He is the heart and soul of that company. And for that reason, he is my wrestler of the year.
Okay. I can see it.
Yeah, Kenny's not a bad choice. Like, right, yeah, like
my only argument from that argument, my only retort from that argument would be, for a very long time, WWE hasn't had superstars like Hogan. I say Cena would be the last one, because they don't want big stars, because they don't want people coming to see Roman Reigns. They want people coming to see WWE. So I think if you remove Roman Reigns from WWE, you get another cog in the machine. Whether it's a better cog or a worse cog is up for debate, because you don't know who it is and what's going to happen. And everything is kind of thrown off base with pandemic time.
Right.
But
I mean, you're looking at a guy who has main evented, by my count, 9 pay-per-views this year. Maybe more. I mean, I'm looking, like, again, I just think, you know, and again, I hate the idea that I'm trying to put Kenny down by going through this, because, you know, that's not my intention. But again, when you look at, just if you look at Reigns' pay-per-view body of work, he wrestled Kevin Owens at the Rumble in the next to last match, in what was a great match, the handcuff spot aside, which I think kind of, you know, let's not go back down that road again, right?
Yes.
You know, he had a interesting lead up to WrestleMania with the whole Daniel Bryan Edge thing. He main evented Fastlane against Daniel Bryan. Obviously, he main evented Night 2 against WrestleMania with the double pin, which I don't think anybody saw coming, but was just wickedly done.
Yeah.
Great way to end that. He main evented Money in the Bank in a 33-minute slugfest with Edge. He, you know, kind of kept the storyline going with Cena through the summer. Main evented SummerSlam against Cena. He main evented, what was next? Brock Lesnar was in there somewhere, I think. No.
Yeah.
He went to Finn first. And he main evented Extreme Rules against Finn Balor.
Yes, because Finn had gotten dropped out of a helicopter into Raw that time. Yeah.
Yep. He main evented Crown Jewel against Brock. He main evented Survivor Series against Big E. Like, to me, I just think he's so important to that promotion right now. And I think, again, this character that he currently has, the tribal chief, the head of the table, you know, acknowledge him, the heel side of Roman Reigns, has been such a breath of fresh air, because it was something that we've been asking for 2 years. Yes. We wanted to see Roman Reigns the bad guy. We're getting Roman Reigns the bad guy, and it's freaking awesome. I think we also were clamoring for a return of the cleaner on the Kenny Omega side. And I'll admit, it left something to be desired for me, because I didn't feel like he needed Don Callis in that role. I think it worked. But again, I would have rather saw Kenny Omega and the Elite stand on their own, you know, in a heelish kind of way, and Don Callis not be as integral as he ended up being.
I think the only reason Callis was in there was because of that was the beginning of the opening of the Forbidden Door.
Right. Right.
Between AEW, yeah, New Japan, and Impact.
Yeah. Like a lot of our choices, again, I think they're both great picks. I think you could make a case for probably 2 or 3 other guys, you know, that had really, really, really good years. I've seen a lot of people on Twitter who are looking at some more underrated guys. I think Big E's had a hell of a year.
Yeah,
I think Big E's had a massive year. I think Jungle Boy's had an amazing year, and his sort of rise up in popularity through AEW. You know,
if you want to look at the Japan side of things, Shingo Takagi he's had a huge year. He's come back from being the third guy in his faction to being World Heavyweight Champion since May, I think, Takatu was. Yeah. And, you know, like really carrying that company through a lot of hard times, because as bad as things are on this side of the ocean with COVID-19, Japan got hit the same or not worse, and they locked down. So really, New Japan's been having some attendance problems, but you can't put that. I don't think you can put that on Takagi. They're selling out every ticket they're allowed to sell. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the three nights of Wrestle Kingdom that are coming up in January.
Can't wait. We're into Wrestle Kingdom season already, baby.
Wrestle Kingdom, the two nights are set. It's Okada and Takagi in the first night as the main event. The winner of that will take on Will Ospreay in night two for the World Heavyweight Championship. And then night three is a interpromotional show between New Japan and NOAH. So a lot of interpromotional matches there between guys that you haven't seen in New Japan or haven't seen in a very long time, in the first of what the New Japan president has called dream matches that are coming up in this 50th year of New Japan. So it's going to be an interesting year to keep an eye on New Japan and what happens. Wouldn't shock me if Takagi comes out with the World Heavyweight Championship. Wouldn't shock me if Ospreay did. And let's be honest, when things go bad in New Japan, they head to Okada. So really, it's, you know, 50-50-50, pick them.
We're looking at a pretty amazing week of wrestling. You're going to have the day one WWE pay-per-view, which I do think will be good. I think Miz and Edge will be really good. I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Reigns and Lesnar going into that. You know, you also have three nights of Wrestle Kingdom, plus you have three very big AEW shows, right? You have the New Year's Smash Dynamite. You know, you're going to have the Dynamite the week after that as well on the 5th. And then you have the special Saturday night Battle of the Belts, which, by the way, I have to point out, and I know we've been going for 2 hours and 10 minutes, so, you know, eventually one of us is probably just going to pass out on air. I have to say,
I'm taking bets on me if current history has anything to say about it.
Can I just, Battle of the Belts, Charlotte, North Carolina, 16-time world champion.
Greensboro. Isn't it Greensboro?
No, it's in Charlotte.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's in Charlotte. Of the AEW Battle of the Belts.
I think they're going to stay away from Flair. Okay.
It's in Charlotte, North Carolina. North Carolina! I'm just saying. Belt-themed episode in Charlotte, North Carolina. What could go wrong?
I don't know. It's going to, like, they've been staying away from Flair since the Dark Side of the Ring episode. And also, depending on how rumors are going, Flair may not want to be around Andrade right now. So it's going to be kind of hard to say.
Maybe Ric Flair buys a ticket and sits in the front row.
Okay, maybe. You know, Space Mountain, it's the oldest ride, but it's still got the longest line.
Yeah, but have you ever seen it with the lights on?
Woo! All right. So what do you think? People that are listening, let us know what you think of our lists. Are we right? Are we wrong? Am I right? Is Coach wrong? Tell us what you think. You can let us know on our website at ringsiderewind.com. You can also check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/ringsiderewind and on Twitter at ringsiderewind. You can find me on Twitter at CD Lawrence and him, He's at Snaggle J.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are so happy you jumped back on the Ringside Rewind bandwagon. We're happy to be back. We're glad to be back. We have some great episodes planned as we head in towards 2022 with a full head of steam, some full cups of coffee, and some really bad opinions that we will tear each other down for regularly. But we appreciate you listening to this episode of Ringside Rewind on ringsiderewind.com or your podcast app of choice on iOS or Android. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. We appreciate it. We appreciate your ear holes each and every time that you listen to us. And we look forward to providing some wonderful listening for you in the future. But until next time,
be kind and rewind.